Sanatana Goswami was very dear to everyone because of his exalted qualities and learning. Suitably, therefore, they bestowed upon him mercy, friendship, and honor. The situation that we are finding here is that it is said in previous verses, the Lord's devotees from Bengal stayed at Jagannath Puri during the 4 months of the rainy season, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Sanatana Goswami to them all. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Sanatana Goswami to these and other selected devotees, Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Srivas Thakur, Bhakreshwar Pandit, Vasudev Dutta Murari Gupta, Raghava Pandit, Damodar Pandit, Paramananda Puri, Brahmananda Bharati, Swarup Damodar, Gadadhar Pandit, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Roy, Jagadananda Pandit, Shankar Pandit, Kashishwar, and Govinda. The Lord asked Sanatana Goswami to offer obeisances to all the devotees in a way that befitted each one. Thus he introduced Sanatana Goswami to them all, just to make him an object of their mercy. And then the verse of today, Sanatana Goswami was dear to everyone because of his exalted qualities and learning. Suitably, therefore, they bestowed upon him mercy, friendship, and honor. Om Gyanati Manandasya Gyanandana Salakya Shakshura Militamyana Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha. So in speaking about vows, we can speak about the four regulative principles, or we can speak about the vow to chant the holy name, Sankhya Purva Ganama Gananatibi, a fixed number of rounds every day. And obviously, there is a difference between these two vows, because by following the four regulative principles alone, one will not develop love of Godhead. But by chanting the holy name, one develops love of Godhead. So therefore, the vow of chanting the holy name is of greater importance still than the vow of the four regulative principles. And therefore, within our preaching also, that has to come out, the chanting of the holy name. That must come out first and then followed by the four regulative principles. If we are a society which pushes the regulative principles so much in the foreground, then sometimes it feels that we become the International Society for Regulative Principles instead of for Krishna Consciousness. So the regulative principles follow the chanting. It begins with chanting. Or at least the chanting is where we really get our connection with Krishna. The four regulative principles create the favorable conditions to really make the connection with Krishna. When these regulative principles are not there, how can we actually really develop a service attitude towards Krishna when we are sinful? That will not be when we are acting against the desire of Krishna. So, in this way. Anyway, we spoke about culture as a means to create support. And obviously, it's not so easy. Yesterday, we spoke about asking somebody very young, 19 years old, who had taken initiation and made heavy vows for life, right? Well, how is it to live with these vows? And I said, well, I think it's good, you know, it's good. It gives you strength. Then the camera zoomed in. Next question was, is it easy to live with vows? Not always. Yes, and then only 19. And how many more years to go? Right. And how can someone of a young age make a vow for life? Not actually understanding at all how at different phases in life one is being affected in different ways by the material energy. And these pushings of the material energy are very strong. As one is young, one is simply has a strong desire to play, and it's difficult to control. Then we grow up, and suddenly there is sex desire. It was never there before, and everything changes. And then before we know, we're still playing a bit, but then we're getting older, we get more serious. Well, I should get on with my life. I should go somewhere. I should try and achieve something in this world. Focused. Then, once we get focused, then we get again a little older, and then at 40, or even earlier, even at 30, we begin to feel old. At 40, we think, well, I'm still young. Right? Then you're really old. You're really starting to get old when you think I'm still young. When you have to convince yourself that you're still young. Right? And that goes on for a while. Right? At 50, 55, we're still faking it, but we know that we're over the hill. At 60, you try to keep up the show, and you think, well, I'm doing all right, but everybody's seeing, like, you know, look, you know, what are you trying to do? At 70, you can't fake it anymore. It's just too late. And after that, you know, wheel them in, right? Okay, this is maybe a way, it's a gross way to represent the point that at different phases of life we have different needs, very different needs. With these different needs, the vows also look different. They look distinctly different. In terms of anthropology, this would be described as rites of passage, that a person goes through different rites of passage, different particular points in life, getting to maturity, getting the entering in the beginning of old age, and so on. All these are like points where we are, where everyone is going through. So a culture must deal with that. A culture must deal with the needs of people at different phases of their life. Vedic culture offers a lot of support at all the major junctions in life. Tamal Krishnamurti dedicated a nice article to it in his book called Hare Krishna at SMU, and where he explores the point that in modern society is very little support. There are very little social mechanisms of support in place. Just for example, someone comes to puberty, and then you sort of got to find out on your own, you know. Maybe you get a birds and bees lecture, or flowers and bees lecture at best, but it may not go very far. Whereas we see that many cultures in the world have a particular, have all kinds of rituals to help one person to go from next one phase in another. And in these rituals, there is some testing, there is some sense of preparing to be strong, there is a, there are elders who are accompanying the person, and so on. So Vedic culture offers a lot of that, that, of course, is very helpful in many ways. So our Krishna consciousness movement has many codes that come from a Vedic tradition. We have a Varnashram society, and for each varna for each ashram. There are certain codes, and to some extent we are following that. Especially when it comes to ashrams, we are following more strictly. When it comes to varna, it's a little unclear because we are not exactly parallel with the varna ashram society that exists in the mundane world. The varna ashram society in the mundane world is such that there is a clear distinction between a sudra, a brahmana, in terms of consciousness and activity. But in the case of Vaishnavas, it's more the work that one does that is classified, but it doesn't matter whether one is a pujari or whether one is doing some physical labor. Everyone is chanting Hare Krishna, and everyone is reading the books, and everyone is on that level one. So in terms of varnas, that doesn't apply in the same way. But one could say the work we do belongs to a particular varna, but the consciousness is Vaishnava, servant of Krishna. And therefore, we can also change that work. In one day, one can be everything. One can in one day go from one varna to another. In the morning, one can be a pujari. Later in the day, one can take out the garbage and be the sudra. Then one can go out and sell something and be a vaisha. And when some intruders enter the temple, one can use his black belt karate from the past upon the unwanted visitor, and be a kshatriya all the way. And in this day, in one day, we can go through all the four varnas. But we cannot go in one day through all the four ashrams. That would be a little too much. especially if we flip-flop in these matters, it would be, there we are more fixed. So, but Varna Ashram, once I gave a lecture on the topic of Varna Ashram, and in that lecture, well, I wanted to point out that Varna Ashram in itself is not transcendental, that rather Varna Ashram is a support structure. And in that lecture, I compared it to a crutch. And the next morning, I had 300 emails. Someone transcribed the lecture overnight and posted it, and I got 300 protest messages, posted it on the Varna Ashram conference, and I got many messages. Of course, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the spiritual significance of Varna Ashram is described. And it is said that Gyan, Vairagya, Varna Ashram. These are activities which are helpful to bhakti, especially in the beginning, but they are not actually limbs of bhakti. 64 limbs of bhakti are mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion. And it said the limbs of bhakti means these are actually aspects of bhakti itself. And if one is engaging in one of these 64, for example, worshipping Tulasi, then one is performing bhakti. One is not just creating a favorable situation for bhakti. It is bhakti. Right? So Varna Ashram in itself is not bhakti. Still, Varna Ashram even exists in the spiritual world. Right? Madhu Mangal is a brahmana, for example. So Varna Ashram is even there in the spiritual world. So Varna Ashram is not not to be just taken lightly. It is a very powerful and important means, and something a devotee should do with that. Still, when I spoke of culture. Yesterday, I spoke of culture in two ways. One was culture in terms of cultivation of a consciousness, Krishna consciousness, and also culture of expressing our nature and desires within certain safe boundaries. So Varna Ashram offers us certain safe boundaries, and it also offers us prescribed duty and so on. Regulative principles, again, offer us safe boundaries. Chanting of Hare Krishna offers us the spirit of cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So there may be some differences for people in different situations of life in terms of culture. A brahmachari will have a little different culture than grihastha and so on. But we all have our common culture. Right? We are all worshipping Krishna, and in that culture, I want to move on. We cannot stay with Varna Ashram. It's not enough. If that is our culture, it's not sufficient. We must go a step further. We must go to a Vaishnav platform. And I'm thinking of the first chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the end of that chapter, there is an interesting addendum to the chapter, notes on the first chapter. And these notes are really, really substantial, very substantial, really worth looking at. Notes to the first chapter of the 10th canto. And in there is also a mention about Mathura. And it is said that Mathura is like, it said, when a devotee becomes completely absorbed in serving Lord Krishna, then he attains the state of Mathura. Right? The state. So here, Mathura is not so much described as a physical location, but is more referred to as a state of consciousness. Mathura being a state of consciousness, Vrindavan being a state of consciousness. So, this is something that means something to me, because somehow or other, by Krishna's grace, I became attracted to Vrindavan as I was a Karmi. I visited there, and it was there that I came to Krishna consciousness, and it was there that I spent a long time in trying to develop Krishna consciousness and doing some service. So Vrindavan meant a lot to me in spiritual life. And one thing I liked about Vrindavan was that Krishna consciousness was so natural, that it was so naturally integrated in society, and that it wasn't just a series of rules and regulations. After Vrindavan, I had also been for a while in the Amsterdam temple, and I remember that oftentimes there, devotees would come to me and say, Prabhu, this is offensive. Prabhu, that is offensive. Prabhu, everything I did was offensive. It was, actually. I was fallen. What can I say? But Vrindavan had that other mood, a mood of like worshipping Krishna in a gorgeous way. Right? Everything was being celebrated very, very huge. Right? Everything was like many, many people would come, and just a simple thing like the first day of spring, all the deities in yellow in all of Vrindavan. Spring. Right. First day of summer, every temple gives out melons. Lots of it. It's melon prasadam. You go around, and I mean, 5,000 temples, even in their home temples, people have melon. And whenever you go, everywhere, it's melon and melon and melon. And then, yes, it's Ekadasi, and the parikrama, the parikram mark, the path around Vrindavan is just full with people. All the villagers are there, and they all have sticks with sugar cane. Why? I've never really heard a scriptural explanation. All I've heard, it's a sign of auspiciousness and so on. And I also noted that it's also a convenient snack on the way, because I've seen these rich basis, you know, chewing away on their sugar cane on the long walk around Vrindavan. It's practical, get the glucose going. So in this way, and that's That's probably where they get that very quick step, because they're fast as they're going around, very fast. Anyway, that culture of really observing all these occasions, the Panjiko or the Vaishnav calendar is a big thing in Vrindavan. It's not just a little thing, it's big. And whenever there's a chance for celebration, no one hesitates. If there is a day to be added to the calendar, add it, you know. And if everyone wants to have a festival outside of the calendar, let's celebrate that as well. There is no limit to how many festivals can be celebrated in Sri Vrindavan Dham for the glorification of Krishna. That is the spirit. So that spirit of Vrindavan, of creating wonderful festivals in worshipping Krishna, that is a very big aspect of culture. It unites us all. It unites us all. And it's very essential to our whole spiritual life and our community. I used to, you know, you look sometimes for good one-liners in a lecture, so I used to sometimes say, nobody bloops during the Sunday feast. Right? That's not the time. Right? You don't bloop during the Sunday feast. Monday is a better day for that. It's like Tuesday, maybe. But definitely not during the Sunday feast. Right? So, in this way, these festivals, they really give us a taste of some ecstasy. Ratha Yatra, there's taste there, which like is beyond anything normal. And we're ready for it. And we're going to do it in a big way, and so on. So these festivals are very much part of our culture. Still, a culture of Varna Ashram, a culture of good sadhana, a culture of wonderful festivals, a culture of worshipping the deities, a culture where we all come together and focus on the 64 limbs of bhakti, right? That culture still needs an important element. And that is the element I focused on today in this particular verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it is said that Sanatana Goswami was very dear to everyone because of his exalted qualities and learning. Suitably, therefore, they bestowed upon him mercy, friendship, and honor. Now, he was approaching seniors, but there were the human aspect comes in, right? The aspect of human relationship. And we see that Sanatana Goswami was given honor. Of course, when we look at Vaishnav behavior and Vaishnav culture, then humility is a central point in the entire Vaishnav philosophy. Our spiritual life is based on it. And a Vaishnav is not eager to take any credit. But here we're seeing that Sanatana Goswami received honor. Right? And it was important and significant. Because what did it mean? It is part of the bond. We are distributing books, and we just had the marathon, and it was a fierce competition between the manor and Soho. If you look at the, of course, no one can take on Scotland. That's like, you know, what can you say? And then there's, you know, some guys in Wales, and you know, and they put everyone in the mud, what can be said between Scotland and Wales. But anyway, the manor and the Soho are trying hard. And we had this whole festival and glorification, and you know, and it's a long haul. You sit there for hours and hours, and this one gets it and that one gets it, and another gift and so on. And another cheer and another bang bang clang clang. It's very... So the giving of honor, right? It's like we are doing that. And that is important in amongst Vaishnavas, to honor the Vaishnavas, to glorify the Vaishnavas, to give them recognition. It's not just to make everybody feel good, you know. Oh, you're so great, you're so great, you're so great. You're number three, so great, so great. Number two, you're even greater, greater. And you are number one, the greatest. Not that. But it is Vaishnava's share. They also share the service they do. And it is also wonderful. If somebody has dressed the deities extraordinarily beautiful, well, if someone says, wow, you really dressed the deities like you just revealed the spiritual world to us, the way you dressed. That's just amazing. Well, naturally, a pujari feels something a little warm in his heart when such recognition is given. So we need that. That's personal. That's personal. So our movement needs a culture of very deep, personal, human relationships. Very deep personal relationships of honor, respect, friendship, mercy, loving Vaishnava exchanges. That's very, very essential. Sometimes we say ISKCON should be a family. When it comes to that, to the family model, I would like to put the family model next to the professional model. If ISKCON is like a professional model, then we are all colleagues, you know. And if my colleague, right, is not getting it together, this colleague of mine is never coming to Mangalarti, and he's just rotting there in the ashram, and it's really... it's kind of upsetting the whole thing, you know. It's disturbing the atmosphere. I mean, we can't have colleagues like that, you know. I mean, Prabhu, shape up or ship out, right? You know, you get one of those kind of approaches, right, with a colleague. Because we're trying to get a job done here together, all right, colleague. And, you know, if you're not, like, you know, getting along with everybody else, we're going to replace you, right? Replace you. I mean, that's the professional atmosphere, right? So if ISKCON is like, has a professional atmosphere, then we start looking around the temple and think, well, some devotees need to be replaced here. And we give them a cold eye and think, we need a better atmosphere in this temple. But if we have a family atmosphere, then what you're going to do? When your brother is sort of a case, okay, what can you do? He's a case, but he's still your brother. So the dynamics of family atmosphere are very different than the dynamics of professional colleagues. So it's very important that we have a family atmosphere where we truly accept one another. Of course, not that we are becoming, that we are meant to be some sort of mental hospital for all the basket cases who can't get it together, and then that one half of the devotees turns into nurses who hold hands and the other half needs their hand to be held. Not that, right? Everyone has to somehow or other take on the battle with his own personal weaknesses and somehow or other overcome them and take shelter in the process and look for purification very seriously and change our conditioned behavior. We cannot just go on forever being without culture and harsh in our dealings and call people names. Something wrong with you upstairs, you know. No, we need to gradually really adopt Vaishnav behavior in our culture. But within it all if the heart is failing, it is not going to work. If somehow or other this sense of friendship is not deep in the Vaishnava community, then even if we have big festivals, even if we have high ashram standards, even if we have regular temple programs and so on, still we walk in the temple and sometimes we feel, I don't know. I'm not feeling at home in this place. I just feel like a stranger in this place. And of course, that happens very much so. And therefore, no one should be neglected. It happens to new people. It happens to older devotees. ISKCON has a tendency it has been called the revolving door. Right? People come in and they, with lots of enthusiasm, and it goes around and whoop, out again. Right? So over the years, many generations of devotees have seen our temples. And then if you're still around, like the last of the Mohicans, at one point you become a living dinosaur. And people start to say, look, you are extinct, right? You are extinct. You're not supposed to be around anymore, you know. We don't need no dinosaurs anymore these days, you know. You are extinct, right? And if you're not extinct, you should be. You belong in a museum. You're outdated. So in this way, it can be difficult to get all these generations of devotees together, all with their different perceptions of what Krishna consciousness is. But simply Vaishnava relationships of offering respect, honor, according to Vaishnava etiquette, where seniority is recognized between Vaishnava, senior, junior, and so on. We can develop a culture. And the essence of that culture is no one is meant to be neglected. No one. No, it's not that. If no one is neglected, but if everyone is given mercy, friendship, honor, respect, right, according to their position, that will bond us together. It's on these strong relationships that exist between Vaishnavas that it is possible that we really feel motivated to be part of a temple. It's very difficult if you are only inspired by the deities and not by the devotees to go to a temple very often. And this may be one of the reasons why some people sort of live nearby and still find it difficult to get over the threshold. Something missing in loving relationship, in a culture of loving relationships. It's not easy. One cannot simply have loving relationships by a resolution. Okay, it's a New Year's resolution, and it's still not too late. It's only beginning of January. We can all write it down on a piece of paper. This year, we're all going to do it. We take the essence of this verse, and we're going to invest in devotee relationships, and we'll be really good. Not easy. Such things they wear off, right? New Year's resolutions wear off quick. So resolution is not going to do it. It is not going to do it. Real friendship is not just going up to someone and saying, "You are my friend." Nice, thank you. No. It takes a lot more. It takes a lot more. In the Chaitanya Chandratoy Natak, which is one of the biographies about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, written by Kavikarnapur, the son of Sivananda Sen, who sucked the toe of Lord Chaitanya when he was only 5 years old. So that's quite a blessing, of course. So it is counted as most authorized, even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita itself. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes that it's authorized in those very words. So it's not some obscure source in the Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak. There is a description how Lord Chaitanya at one point, well, every night there are these amazing kirtans in Srivasangan. So it's just going on all night, huge kirtans. So one devotee was getting a little tired during the kirtan. And this one devotee decided to find a little corner in the house and took a nap. When he woke up, everyone was gone. So, well, he also left Srivas Angan and he met one of the devotees. And the devotee said, "Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has gone." He said, I know, I saw everybody left. Yeah, Mahaprabhu also went, he must have gone home. The devotee again says, "No, he is gone." "Gone? What do you mean, gone?" "Gone, he didn't go home. The Lord is gone." And then you go into this ocean of intense separation where all the devotees are just almost dying. Lord Chaitanya is gone. They count the hours. He's already been gone for 10 hours and we are still alive. How can we be still alive? We are only living by the rope of hope. Anyway, it goes on for 3 days like that. Not only Lord Chaitanya gone, Lord Nityananda gone, and also Chandrasekhar Acharya, also known as Acharya Ratna, gone. Then on the third day, Acharya Ratna comes back, sent by Lord Nityananda. Everyone jumps on him, said, "Where is the Lord?" Acharya Ratna says, "I cannot say it." Everyone says, "Acharya Ratna, where is he? Speak." Acharya Ratna, "What happened?" Acharya Ratna goes, "Lord Chaitanya." Everyone understood it. He took sannyas. Okay, that was a big drama. Everyone's heart broke right there. It was as if that rope of hope was cut. And then Acharya Ratna said, "But I have a message from Nityananda for Advaita Acharya." Speak, what is it? Said, "Nityananda says that somehow or other, by hook or by crook, he will bring the Lord to the house of Advaita Acharya." Advaita Acharya just began to dance at that point and called out and said, Nityananda, what a friend. He has conquered my heart. So, this is very significant. Right? That friendship is not just a matter of like having an istagosti, and we say we all need a family atmosphere here and we all need to develop more a mood of friendship in this temple, in this movement. No, friendship is only attained after conquering the heart. That is the amazing thing. So we need a culture in this movement. We need a culture where Vaishnavas serve each other in such a way that they conquer each other's heart. And that will give us deep bonds, and that will somehow or other pull us through this whole process. That will pull us through till the very end. So that is the very essence of this Vaishnav culture. That, of course, with Varnashram, of course, with the 64 limbs of bhakti, of course, with the four regulative principles, of course, with chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping the deity, of course. Okay, any questions or comments?